Welcome to Renegade Naturalist Radio with Dr. Dan Bakken. Real stories and real science about nature and our changing environment. Dan's guest today is Charles Beveridge, the world's foremost expert on Frederick Law Olmsted. Olmsted was a visionary urban planner and landscape architect who brought nourishing green spaces to New York, Boston, Chicago, and dozens of other U.S. cities in the late 1900s.
This is Dan Bakken, and I'm pleased today to be able to talk with Charles Beveridge. Charlie is the editor of the Frederick Law Olmsted papers. Of course, Frederick Law Olmsted designed Central Park, did many other urban landscape designs, and then he has a beautiful picture book, Frederick Law Olmsted Designing the American Landscape. And so, Charlie, it's really nice to be talking with you today.
Well, I'm delighted to have the opportunity.
Now, Charlie, there's lots of interest in the environment, but right now it's focused on some very general global things, climate change, general biological diversity, some talk, especially around New York, about hurricanes. But there isn't a lot of focus on what you and I consider very important, the role of cities in people's lives and the role of nature in cities. And so I want to start with that. I know Olmsted said some really wonderful things when he finished designing Central Park about the importance of vegetation and nature in cities.
Yes, well, Olmsted was very concerned about nature and very aware of the power of nature and the way the kind of role that it could play in society and in cities and American cities in particular. But it was everything he was concerned with was a mixture of nature and art. He was not interested in wilderness, and that was really true of much of his generation. They had plenty of wilderness. They were interested, at least Olmsted was and some others, in wildness, and Olmsted's approach is in some ways similar to Thoreau's in that respect. There are certain kinds of designs that Olmsted does, like the fens in Boston, where he emphasizes the creation of wild space, one where there's that strength of the experience of nature, rather than something that's prettified and all well-kept and so forth.
That's an interesting point, which I think is worth emphasizing because, you know, as you know, Thoreau is famous for the statement, and wildness is the preservation of the world, which is generally interpreted by pro-environmentalists and anti-environmentalists to mean that civilization was no good and that it was only wilderness that should be around. But as you and I know, Thoreau, what he really meant was that wilderness was a place which he wasn't particularly impressed with, although he visited it, and wildness was a state of mind, of spirit. I mean, the quote from Thoreau that I like the best is that he says, "One day I was he was walking in the woods and he saw a woodchuck, and I wanted to grab it and kill it and eat it raw, not because I was hungry, but because of the wildness in it." So he wanted to get the experience. I think when you're talking about the fens in Boston, which was the reconstruction of a wetland area, that's the kind of thing Olmsted was thinking about. Is that correct?
That's right. Fortunately, Olmsted did not get carried away to the point of going after the woodchucks in his park. But nonetheless, they're in those parks too, even the ones that are not marshland, as the fens was. There's a special character to those landscapes that he created, and they're much more natural, really, and wilder than the European parks that he had seen before, and whose tradition he drew from in some respects. That's part of it, and a very important element. The other is that even in a 600-acre park, and really that's about as large as most of his larger ones are, you're still doing a certain kind of miniaturizing. You're not just taking acres and acres of existing landscape and talking about the experience of nature. I think he felt partly that it was inefficient. It was something you couldn't do for city populations. You had to somehow organize the landscape and organize nature as landscape in a much more sort of thorough way to create an intense and coherent experience within the compass of the land available and land that was close to where people lived, even in the midst of cities. The other aspect of it was that that landscape had to be made accessible. And so one of the great geniuses or parts of Olmsted's genius was the creation of circulation systems that would enable you to move through that designed and constructed landscape without destroying it. And in fact, he applied the same kind of approach to his proposals for Yosemite and for Niagara Falls, both of which were scenic reservations where he didn't change very much, but where very complex circulation systems were engineered in order to make the landscape accessible without destroying it.
Okay, so you're saying that his goal was to be able to create this sense of experiencing wildness, which is kind of a spiritual response, an internal response, but it required careful design and access.
That's right, both of those elements. And after all, it was not just wildness that he's dealing with. He's dealing with creation of a space that you can immerse yourself in and get in a kind of what he called a musing state, something where it's something that reaches below the level of consciousness. And for that, you need not only wildness, you also need that possibility of that coherent experience, and for that you need the subordination of all elements of the space so that you are most deeply experiencing it. And the restorative power of that kind of experience of nature, if you can find it, that works that way, or design nature by a landscape architect who carefully gets rid of any intrusions visually and also provides a path through it. That created a kind of experience, a restorative experience that was crucial, he thought, for people living in cities.
Charlie, now you brought up the idea of design, and I think that's important too, because I don't think that's as much a part of the present environmental discussion as it used to be or should be. For example, in New York City, they've just built this new fancy High Line, which is a converted rail of elevated railway made into a park, and it's very fashionable, very pretty, and very nicely designed. But what's going on is that what was a very rundown area is now being rapidly built up with huge buildings right next to the High Line, which crowd it and change the entire character of the city. What I'm understanding you to say is that there's an idea of designing spaces in cities, and could you say a little bit about that and the goals of it and why it's useful?
Well, certainly Olmsted had in mind the creation of a whole range of different kinds of public space experiences, and I guess the crucial thing beyond the sort of experience that he has in the large parks is the idea of using public space as common ground, as a creator of community. And common ground, that is a whole series of different parks and recreation areas that are available to everyone, and that gives a sense of common ownership and therefore of community. And for that, you would have a whole variety of different kinds of spaces, including something like the High Line.
Charlie, you're very much involved in these activities as a consultant as well. So what would you say are the biggest lacks in what's happening in our cities today in terms of getting people in contact with nature and in nice, good design of cities?
Well, I think that for one thing, that you have to, that it's not necessarily just experiencing nature that people should be talking about, although I grew up getting out into the woods and along the shore and so forth, didn't see much in my own experience of a design landscape for a long time, but I have come to appreciate the importance of designed landscape for coherent experience and pleasant experience, and I think in many ways people are not sufficiently aware of what is needed in the way of design in any kind of urban space, unless you've got thousands of acres somewhere, and that's not going to be very close to the city. And you see it both Of course, with Olmsted's style of design, people don't understand how much design went into it because it looks natural, and that's one of the great drawbacks of that. It's hard for them to understand. I remember reading something in an encyclopedia recently about the sheep meadow in Central Park about it was a clearing that just was there. Well, it wasn't a clearing. It was a marsh and a pile of rocks, and they changed got rid of some rock outcrops to 10, 15 feet high in order to make that lawn. It was a tremendous amount of moving of rock and dirt and so forth. And then people don't know that that's mm-hmm. the case. That's an important element of all of that.
So this is a very different view and a very interesting view of people and wildness and people and nature. Today we think of wilderness is out there, like the Bob Marshall's 250 miles to the nearest road, and some people think that's the only way you can experience nature. Mm-hmm. And so what this is very different. It sounds like it's much more like the Japanese idea that, you know, you can have a rock garden and you stare, you sit and meditate in front of the rocks and you get a sense of wildness. Maybe this is something very important to inject into our modern city life and our design.
And I also think that it's possible. There's a kind of exploring. Again, I grew up exploring landscapes, the islands, and off the Maine coast, for instance, and in the woods of Vermont and New Hampshire as well. And now you get that experience of exploration, of the opening up of new kinds of views, new parts of the landscape in Olmsted's larger parks, but you get it in smaller ones too. And that whole question of the progression of experience, even of a smaller linear park, is a crucial element. And one of the great problems there is fine, there's often money available to create things, but there's not money left to maintain them. And that's the other great problem of parks. We see a lot of new parks being created, and we see a lot of old parks being neglected because the maintenance money is not there. That's a different issue, but it's a crucial one.
That's interesting. Charlie, there's a whole other topic we don't have a lot of time, but I think it's really important to talk about. With the concern about climate change, there's a lot of discussion about the need for migratory corridors that should be established for animals and plants. But there's not much discussion about where cities fit into it. Again, it's this idea that there's cities and then there's nature. And yet, you've told me a lot about in the late 19th century, early 20th century, there were the design of garden cities and beltways intentionally to create cities within a landscape. Could you talk a little bit about that and how it might fit in with these interests in migratory corridors?
Well, again, the example that one finds in Olmsted's own work is that he did design residential communities that had a great deal of open space in them, and therefore there was room both for the considerations you're speaking about and also considerations of the needs of people. But I think that a crucial thing in much of this is to make sure that the needs of the residents themselves, of the people, are considered as well as those of, you know, other naturalistic considerations.
Okay, so it's a matter of people and nature, which is a really important theme to me and to you. Charlie, we've pretty much run out of time, and so it's been great talking with you, as usual, and thanks so much for doing this.
Well, I've really enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
This has been Renegade Naturalist Radio, hosted by Daniel Bakken. For more information about Dan or about his books, please go to www.danielbbakken.com.